I would return to this part of El Salvador numerous times during the years I covered the conflict. I often stayed with Adela's uncle Gabriel, who continued to farm on the outskirts of Las Flores. But I worked on other stories in El Salvador too. The first and only tattooed gang member I met in El Salvador was before the end of the war, and he was a patient at the Rosales Public Hospital. On my first day there, a voice in Chicano-accented English called out from the far end of the ward, "What's up? Finally, somebody from my country?" "What country is that?" I asked. "I'm from Los," he responded, dragging out the vowel. "The United States of Los Angeles. Where are you from?" I was intrigued by Franklin Torres and his 18th Street Gang tattoos, as well as by the tragic irony of the story he told. His family came from the foothills of the Usulutan volcano. In the early 1980s, that area had seen brutal torture and murder of teachers, union organizers, and peasants suspected of supporting the insurgents. Franklin's mother brought him to Los Angeles, thinking that she would keep him safe from gangs. And in my search to find her, I found the stories of other young people involved in gangs. No one in their right mind sets out to spend 20 years working on a book. I certainly didn't. When I began my research on the refugees from the wars who, like Franklin, had fled to Los Angeles for safety, but ended up in neighborhoods struggling with poverty, crime, and youth gangs, I had a very different idea in mind. One evening early in my research, I made the rounds of the Central American immigrant enclave in LA's Pico Union District with a young tagger who told me he could take me to places where the gangs hung out. Usually I avoided this way of entering, just as I had not wanted that peasant woman who led me into the guerrilla zone to become a target for helping a journalist without the required safe conduct pass. I didn't want any of the young people I met through violence prevention programs to take heat for allowing a journalist to nose around. But this young man assured me he could take me to see the wall murals and other attractions that white people with cameras always want to see. "If you keep your eyes open, you'll see stuff going down," he said. "I won't need to show you anything." We didn't run into any veteran gang members that night, but a younger member came up to me and wanted to know what I was doing. I told him I was working on a book about young people's lives. "Lady, put me in your book, put me in your book," he said. "Take my picture." I took a couple of snapshots, more to break the ice and respond to his request than anything else. "Am I going to come out in the book?" he asked. "I can't promise that," I replied. "To make a book takes a lot of pictures and a long time." I told him I couldn't say for sure, but that my best guess would be that it would take about 3 years if all went well. "Shit, I won't be alive by then," he responded dejectedly. Bemused, I asked gently, "How old are you, son?" 16, he replied. "So you'll be 19 when it comes out, and of course you'll be alive by then," I said with a smile. And then this youngster gave me a math lesson with his body that I will never forget. First, there were the rest in peace tattoos for fallen homeboys and homegirls all over his torso. Rest in peace, Snoopy. Rest in peace, Trusty. Rest in peace, Bullet. Rest in peace, Blackie. Rest in peace, Indio. Rest in peace, Dreamer. Then he rattled off an additional 15-odd names, cousins, brothers, boys and girls who lived in the neighborhood. "None of them made it to 20, he said. "What makes you think I'm gonna?" he asked blasély.